This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Brian Turner is a poet from Orlando. He's a US Army veteran serving in Bosnia-Herzegovina and Iraq. His books include Phantom Noise, Hear Bullet, and My Life as a Foreign Country. He's director of the MFA program at Sierra Nevada College and currently in Ireland as the inaugural John Montague International Poetry Fellow. He has a new book out called The Kiss, Intimacies from Writers. It's an anthology of essays, stories, poems, and graphic memoirs where writers explore the deeply human act of kissing. Brian Turner, welcome back to Intersection.
Oh, it's an honor. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, this book includes a piece by your wife, the poet Elise Kuznets. She passed away in 2016. Tell me about her role in creating this anthology.
You know, a couple years back in 2014, that's when the idea initially came to me. I think Elise and I actually probably thought it up together. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened. And I approached Guernica online to create a series called The Kiss, and then that eventually found its way into the shape of an anthology. But very early on, Elise was, you know, she was battling cancer and undergoing all these treatments, living, you know, we both lived there in Orlando, and at the time, medical marijuana was not legal, for example, and so there was this medicine that was available in the world but illegal to use, and it really troubled her and both of us in many ways, and that initially sparked this particular essay. So the essay for me is poignant ways that are meaningful in terms of the two of us personally, but also there's a kind of sense of like social justice to it, you know, this idea of how do we care for people in pain and dealing with a significant illness. And so I very much wanted to see this book to print, really to create an assembly of voices around this piece. I wanted her essay to be out in the world and shared and read by many people, and for folks to have to think about the difficult choices we make as communities with those we care about.
So how does it feel now that the book is out in the world?
It's kind of bittersweet in some ways because she's not here to see it, you know, or read it. And normally when a book would come out, or if we had a good news in our life, we would go out and celebrate. So I continue that tradition. I went out to have a dinner, but, you know, sitting across the table and there's an empty chair, and it's bittersweet is the word I come up with, but I don't really have language to really access that just yet. But I am happy to see her work out in the world and to hear people being moved by it.
I read in an interview you gave to World Literature magazine about a year ago that you were looking for a publishing house for your wife's second collection of poems and to publish her work in some journals and literary sites. Is this project, this particular book you've put out now, The Kiss, is that part of that greater scheme?
It is part of that. In fact, it was very fortunate because her book of poems, it's called Angel Bones, and that's been accepted for publication from Alice James Books, and that'll be published in May of 2019. So we're doing the behind the scenes work on that right now, and it's a beautiful book. It's a painful, beautiful book, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with people too. Yeah.
What about the process of putting it together? Describe what that was like. It started its life as an online work. Did you always want to see it in print, or is that something that sort of emerged as you gathered more pieces for it?
You know, I always wanted to see it as a collection. I could kind of see it in my mind's eye, but then again, I didn't know what would show up on the doorstep as writers that I reached out to brought their work for the project. So month by month, it just seemed like the initial idea made complete sense, you know. It's not a book of romantic kisses, you know. There are some very romantic kisses in it, but it's really this sort of the messiness of human life and how we try to create connection with one another, focusing on the specific act of kissing. But really, it reveals in a study of these different types of kisses the wide range of human interaction and how we try to bridge the divide between one another. So I've been surprised piece by piece as these writers have created them. And And I think that's one of the reasons, as a reader, that's what I look for most when I read, is I want to be surprised by the, not only by what the writer came up with, but by what I thought I knew, but then having to upend it a bit so that I see it in a new way.
Do you think people who are familiar with some of your other work might be a bit surprised that your name's on an anthology that looks, you know, from the front cover as though it's a romantically themed piece?
I think so. I think some of the guys in my platoon, I haven't even had a chance to reach out to them to ask them, but I'm going to ask them that very question. I took a photo in the local bookshop here in Ireland because they have, as bookstores do around Valentine's Day, they have the love table, you know. It even has a sign that says, like, love books or something like that. And I took a photo of it because there was the kiss right in the center of it. And that's a kind of a life goal that I never knew I was going to achieve, you know. But I think it's a sign of a very good thing. I've had beautiful things happen in my life and very difficult things. I've written about a lot of the difficult things, but I would like, over the course of my life, the true subject of all of my books, whether it's been about the books I wrote before are connected to war and trauma and tragedy and large difficult events, but underneath it, the actual subject is love and loss. So the through line of the subject is throughout all these books, and so there really is a deep connection with them, but it's hard to see on the surface sometimes.
Did you keep writing while you were caring for Elise through her illness, or did you put your writing on hold for a while?
It's been hard. It continues to be hard in some ways, but I actually shifted a bit, and the work isn't really out in the world that much yet, but in the central Florida area, there's a massive jazz scene, and so I think my mind had to shift from language to sound and to music, and so I've been working with some local musicians. He goes by the name Pressure Wave. He performs oftentimes in Orlando. Jared Sylvia and Benjamin Kramer, who's an amazing jazz bassist. And they both are just phenomenal musicians and human beings. And the three of us have been a core of a couple different music projects. And because I travel quite a bit around the world, I've been able to, I've brought in basically session tracks from different people. And like an opera singer from Cologne, an accordion player from London, a blues guitarist from The Hague, and people across America, et cetera, et cetera. And so over the last few years, I've just finished a second album, and later this year I'm going to try to launch those and get those out in the world and share them too. But I think, to get to the heart of your question, I couldn't, and I'm still struggling to find words to put to some of these things. I have written an essay that really delves into cancer and, the sort of journey that the two of us were on and I'm still on. And I think that'll turn into a collection of essays probably over the next couple of years, I imagine.
So tell me more about the music. What do you play?
Well, I'm not good at anything, but I dabble in quite a few things. But I started, when I was a boy, I started as a trumpet player. So a few years back, I got a flugelhorn, and now I've couple of those and a trumpet, and I got a baritone when I was in Europe at one point. So I play a variety of horns, and in my early 20s, I shifted and started playing bass guitar. I played in some, sort of punk rock bands and punk rock by default. We didn't know any chords, so we had three or four chords. We played loud and fast, and so we sounded punk, basically. But over time, I started playing, and our bands evolved into more of like a hard rock and then blues and some jazz and experimental stuff. And so I do a variety of things, a little bit of vocals. Thankfully, Ben Kramer, who does a lot of music engineering as well, he's a master with putting some sweetener and some tuning on my voice to make me sound quite a bit better. So it does tie back in with my work with Elise, because a lot of times when a spouse or loved one passes away, there's a really difficult navigation, especially like if you're artists, for example. I want to remember her, and I want to find ways to share her work with others, but I'm trying to fight the impulse and the natural process, I think, of creating kind of artistic tombstones that further create a large sort of cemetery of her life kind of thing. Instead, I'm trying, and it's very hard, but I'm trying to figure out ways to continue to collaborate with her so that she has some kind of active participation in the construction of meaning and art. And so I'll give you an example. In the latest music project. And if folks go online, there's a website called Interplanetary Acoustic Team. That's a long title, but that .com. The Interplanetary Acoustic Team is a fake band with Ben that I just mentioned and Jared and quite a few others. And what I did is I went back through a lot of her recordings over the past few decades of her poetry readings. She did some journalism where I have some of the background telephone conversations that she did with some folks. And I cherry-picked from them on a specific theme about cybernetics and the uploading of consciousness. This very sort of futuristic, technological kind of conversation that was threaded throughout some of her work. And I used that language, her actual voice, and then we created, I really got into another instrument, which is, or a series of instruments, modular synthesizers and that type of scene, I guess, and tried to create a landscape of sound that could then showcase her speaking to us. So the album is, all the language is hers, and often, most of the time, it's her actual voice, and then I brought in as many musicians as I could to kind of collaborate with her.
Brian Turner, let me come back to what you're doing right now in Ireland. You're kind of on hallowed ground, I guess, as far as, you know, the land that some of the greatest poets in the history of the English language have come from. How does it feel to be part of that tradition in a way?
It's amazing. And in the contemporaries that are here, the city of Cork, for example, it's teeming, it's thriving with poetry. I think someone the other day said there's something like 30 different published poets here. So you know that there are those in the wings that will be published in the future. And those who are writing who don't care anything about publishing itself, but just people who create poetry here. And there was a reading about a week and a half ago. I was told about it like kind of last minute, walked over with a friend, went inside. It was in a little pub. It was packed. And I've never had this happen in the States. I'm sure it does. But I walked in. It was a two-level pub, and upstairs I could just see, if I looked straight up, I could see, it was almost like a loft, I could see the part of the loft, and I could see the backs of the interviewer and the person who was reading. It was a writer that was up there talking to the audience, and when I walked in, I shut the door quietly behind me. The entire place down below, even, it was a bar, but it was, you would hear a pin drop. The focus on the language that was happening upstairs was, the attention to it was an attention that I rarely see in America. So it is wonderful, yeah. And it's a great opportunity for me to engage the English language in a different way, because it's a little bit like a painter's palette. You know, in America we have a wide sweep of words or a wide sweep of colors that we have available to us in the language. But I come here and I'm hearing English, but it's a different version. There's a different palette. There are all these different words that are, to me, it feels like it's being reclaimed. But of course, here it's just part of the natural way of being and way of thinking. You know,
is there a stronger oral tradition in Ireland?
Yeah, I don't want to elide over like First Nations peoples in the States. There are oral traditions there that are very, vibrant and go deep, right? But absolutely, here you can really see it, and the idea of a lot of people carry poems inside of them. You know, they have them memorized. I went into a cafe and I got a tray of food, and I turned. It was very busy and bustling, very loud, and there was an elderly woman who it looked like we were about to go to the table at the same time. So it was that sort of debate of who gets the table, you know. And then we both very quickly, smiled, said, "Well, let's share the table together." And she, in that moment, realized very quickly with a phrase or two that I was American. And then she asked me why I was there. I said I was a poet. And she said, "Oh." And then, without missing a beat, she just quoted a poem from Yeats. And then looked at me like, "Go ahead, quote a Yeats poem," And I was kind of dumbfounded. And then she just went on to do another and another. And she doesn't consider herself a poet or anything. She just loves the language. And it's this wonderful art form that can be portable, And I can really see it here and sense it here with a lot of the people.
When can we expect you back in Orlando, back in the States, and what can we expect for you as far as the next body of work?
I'll be back in just a short time. Actually, I'm going to be in Tampa for the Associated Writing Programs Conference in summer on the anniversary of Elisa's birthday. That'll be July 13th, and that's when I plan to release the Interplanetary Acoustic Team's album, which is... The title comes from one of her poems, which The poem is "When I'm Downloaded into a Most Excellent Robot Body." And in that poem, she says, one of the lines is, "In case I forget to tell you, 1001 is binary for a sigh. 1111 is me smiling." So I've titled the album 1111, Me Smiling. And I'm looking forward to it. I've already made T-shirts. We've got artwork. It's a lot of fun, and it's a celebration of her work and a way of for me of continuing to learn from her.
We've been talking to Brian Turner. His new book is called The Kiss: Intimacies from Writers, an Anthology of Essays, Stories, Poems, and Graphic Memoirs. Brian Turner, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Matthew. I appreciate it.
Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Education reporting on 90.7 News is brought to you by Helios Education Foundation. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. You can find us online at wmfe.org/intersection. We're on the NPR One app, and you can download the podcast from iTunes. I'm Matthew Petty. Follow me on Twitter @Matthew_Petty. Thanks for listening.